Good morning. It's Coach to Coach Practicum 2, the third class, on Monday, January 18th. And it's the October group with Susan Grace Beekman. Here we are. All right. Let's do a check-in. You know, I think we talked before about how you start doing this work and then you start noticing all these thoughts and all these situations. And you all, sometimes it's just the noticing for yourself. And also, you've been given the homework to practice it in various ways. So what was your experience before we move into turnaround?
You mean of working with other people?
Either way. Just what was, and say your name if you don't mind before you talk so I can connect. It would be, sometimes it's just I'm walking around and I'm thinking, he's really a pain in the ass, and I think, is that true? You know, sometimes
yeah.
It's like that, and I start to loosen a little. But also, you all work to practice, so any questions about practicing with a client, too. Just let me know where you are with it.
This is Jennifer.
Hi.
My experience has been on my own belief when I catch them is that I tend to skip the is it true because I know it doesn't matter if it's yes or no, and I can feel how it's making me feel, so I don't have to ask myself what's happening to me. I just know it's painful, and then I go right to the turnaround. So it's almost become automated pilot for me to go right to the turnaround and realize that I can't, I just let it go then, which I find really helpful. But I've been doing a lot of practicing, so I think that's why I keep skipping the is it true, because I know most of the time it isn't true, and even if I think it's true, it's probably not.
Yeah. Well, you know, the doing it on the fly like that can be really helpful, and I heard you say that you were pairing that with practice with your partner or something. And that is, I think the writing out of it and the going through the process formally, it's so much deeper. So you can get the fast track, but it's really also good to do practice, obviously.
When I work with my partner, I do it the full thing, but just when I notice it myself judging someone, I just go right to what could I be judging? Why am I judging them? And I turn it around and
right.
I come up with my own thoughts.
Yeah.
Feel like it helps me because then I feel like I'm not ruminating over any stress. I should say most of them. I wouldn't say all of them because I still have my own personal religions I'm working through.
Yeah. They just keep on giving, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So
my number one, actually.
What'd you say?
I said it's my number one in my limiting belief that I posted. It's like that one I can't
Okay. I have that in front of me right now. So,
okay.
Good.
I do have a question, though.
Yeah, Jennifer.
Is it okay to ask questions now, or should I wait till
this? Absolutely. That's what we're doing right now.
Okay. I had two questions. The first one is, what if a person doesn't believe the turnaround is truer than the original belief? Like, how do you shake that? Because I've noticed...
Great question.
When someone has
the
religion...
Whole, I'm so glad you asked that. And I wanted to say something about the yes and no at the beginning, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's... The yes, to me, or no, is it true? Can you answer the no, it's true? It's not something to dismiss. I use it as a dipstick to see how wedded I am to the belief. So even though I can see reasons it might not be true, I also feel, I still feel that feeling of stickiness and like righteousness. So
mm-hmm.
I will answer yes for number two also, sometimes. And there's not a right answer, but for me, the yes and the no at the beginning are a way to check that to see how sticky it is. And also to slow down. It's kind of like they're speed bumps. Because you come out of this other world where you're, jamming and you call your other tools and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, okay. So let's look a little deeper and slow it down. And it's just a question that you ask you in a meditative way. So that's how I use yes and no. And there's not pressure to say no. I've heard some people do it that way, but that's, I feel absolutely confident that that's not the way it's intended. So, and really the goal of all of this is to answer your second question. The goal of all of it really is to help them understand their own mind. It's not for them to change their mind or to do anything. So when you do the turnaround, it's let's just see what you might have missed. You know, sometimes things turn up. It isn't like they have to be convinced. That takes it back into the intellectual or mental, and then it takes it into the war with, you know, the defensiveness and the mind. And the mind can think of 100,000 arguments. So if you can say, you know, we do the turnarounds just to try out other possibilities, you can have that thought back, you know. Nobody's taking it from you. It's just to understand where you are on this, you know, how it is for you more fully and or more from your essential self. And that helps with the turnarounds. It helps me to feel like I don't have to get to a conclusion. And most of all, it helps their mind to open. And then you're looking at all the possibilities, and then I will talk today about then moving it into living the turnaround. So, you know, it seemed like this turnaround or this turnaround seemed to have some juice for you. What would you do, you know, choose one. What would you do this week if that were truer? How might that change the next time you see this person or the next time you're in that situation?
And we're going to talk about that too. Like,
so to me, turnarounds are like taking up, I used to have a Rubik's Cube where I posted those different kinds of turnarounds, you know, when I was seeing more people more in locally, and I don't do that as much now. So they could look at it. It's just, oh, it's just a way to turn the mind around. You know, it's awareness. It's not convincing them of anything. Did that, and I know you know that, but did that resonate for you?
Yeah, it did. Thank you. And then I had one other question. When I was watching the Byron Katie, the work videos, I noticed there was one about chronic pain. And Byron Katie said, physical pain is either anticipated or remembered. It's never experienced. And I was just curious if you'd seen that video and if you have any idea what she's talking about, because I, that kind of left me perplexed. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, is anybody else there?
I'm still here.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Did we lose Susan?
Yeah, we lost our teacher.
Okay. All right, just checking.
It was the question.
The host has joined the conference.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Where did you go?
I left her so confused she jumped off the call.
He's really gone. Is it true? Oh, and by the way, if I haven't said that to you, I do. I'm saying it now. I will always call back. And I'm not all that sharp in logistics, but somebody said to me the other day, I have an agreement that whoever knows it, their phone hung up the call is the one to call back. And so I've been doing phone work for like 7 or 8 years, and it never occurred to me. So I'm always calling people back, and they call me back and leave messages. We'll call back. Wow, that's simple. So I'm passing on that simple little trick for you guys. Okay, and I also am still struggling with my headset. Let me. I have much better sound for me, but apparently it makes me sound like I'm in a tunnel. And the other one thinks that good sound for you, but apparently it cut you off. So you might hear a tunnel. and we'll go from that. Is this okay?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So were there any questions about what I was just saying about the business of yes and no and also turnarounds and why you do them? In
Jen
connection
had asked
with
a question.
That, when you do a turnaround, I'm sorry I talked over you, but when you do a turnaround, you hold the it's really good to write it down, the original thought, and it should be there all the time because your mind will forget it in there as well, and then write around each turnaround so that you can see which ones you've done because it can start to get a little dizzying. And I noticed that people are now doing that for Katie when she facilitates. It's very subtle, but she'll have a little iBook there, and somebody told her what the turnarounds are. Okay. Anybody else?
Well, I had one other question.
Jody?
Okay, Jennifer had a question, then Jody.
Okay. So my second question was, I was watching one of the Katie videos, and it was on chronic pain. And she said, physical pain is either anticipated or remembered. It is never experienced. And I was confused by that, so I was hoping that you maybe saw the video or you might have an insight as to what that means.
Well, that's one of those Katie-isms. oh, God. You know, I told you that I did go to a conference, right? Just since I last talked to you, I was with Katie at the summit where they were doing certification of candidates. And somebody said, don't ever do it the way Katie does. That'll just screw people up. Or don't teach it the way Katie does it. She's a mess. It was kind of joking. It was somebody at the podium. But, yeah, what she's saying, I've come to understand, is, and a lot of work that I've done and seen her do with people who have trauma, this can actually have had, it can also be helpful. You look at the actual moment and you slow it down enough that you realize that you have a memory of the pain in the past and you have an anticipative of the pain in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But in the present, without either one of those, who am I without the thought? There's a moment in time where the mind slows down and it's torturing itself with the past and the future. And she says things very adamantly, she isn't qualified stuff, but it is a really helpful concept if you're working with people with pain to notice how long it actually lasts, how much of it is a story of the past and a fear of the future. Did that help?
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's more of an exploration and invitation to the client. I would never go in and say, well, no, you're really not in pain, you know. Mm-hmm. But just, I think of the work a lot of times as an invitation to go more deeply into their experience and see what they notice, become more aware. Okay, so Jody?
One comment, and I have a comment and a question. My comment is, I found it very helpful because, like most of us, we've learned Byron Katie's work intellectually by reading about it, maybe watching the YouTube videos. So then it feels like something to know, a tool to know in your brain. And when Martha, in a couple of classes ago, clarified that actually it's a meditation and you have to feel it in your body, that has really helped me with the turnarounds because, of course, when you try to feel something in your body, that's different than trying to think of what the right turnaround is. And so I don't know if that helps anybody
Great.
But I've noticed when I've been practicing, we seem to all do that, like that, you know, we intellectualize it, like what's the right turnaround, instead of just taking a moment to feel, to see if our bodies will tell us. Or to say a turnaround and then try to feel that turnaround in your body. And that leads into
Absolutely. I'm so glad to hear that she's saying that because otherwise, you know, that was her experience having just been to the school. Because otherwise, it looks, it's like a middle school worksheet. You know, I know what worksheets are, right? I just have to get the right answer.
Right. And
so
also that
I body cues. Go on.
Well, I think I might have read this in one of her books, but it also helped is that if you're doing it to feel better, then that's also it's how you approach it. You don't want to do it to feel better, even though that's usually why I use the work, is to feel better. But we use it to find freedom. And even that was a shift, like, oh, this is about getting free, not about feeling better. And, of course, you do feel better when you're free. But my question, tying into this, it still feels a little bumpy to me of how to tie all of these things together. So when you're practice coaching, for example, you know, and you maybe start out using the body compass and you find out a person has a sensation in their body and we're talking about, you know, working with that. And then somehow tying that into the work, I don't know, that feels still a bit choppy to me. Or are these tools, you know, meant to sort of pull out at different times when you sense, oh, this client, you know, the work would be good here, or maybe the body stuff would be good here? Or are they meant to sort of all flow together? And maybe I'm ahead of myself. I don't know. But
I think you will develop the way that it flows together for you. The main thing about the work is I wouldn't, you know, it's kind of a process. It's like if you start a yoga practice and then somebody comes in and says, here, why don't you do, I mean, I know people mix it up, you know, with Pilates or whatever, but, you know, let's do some sit-ups. And you're in the middle of your practice. You know, so the tools can be, in that way, tools can be invasive of your own understanding of your own mind. And the whole purpose of the work is to hold the client's mind so they can get whatever insights the thoughts are trying to give them, so they can understand themselves better. However, I do use, I wouldn't teach the body compass, but I teach the body compass or share it usually pretty early in a section because when I first started with a client, because I think it's so useful as you go about your day. And then they come familiar with shackles off and shackles on, and I might use that language. So, you know, how does that feel in your body is what I'd say, but if they try to describe it, I might say, oh, that sounds kind of shackles off or on then. But I don't overdo the other tools, but I, you know, my cues are often on question number 3, how does it feel in your body? And where is it in your body? And I also have them located, and then I might go back and go and do a body metaphor tool with them. So we do a whole guided, whole other thing where we go in, I go into their body, and they see their heart, and they see what they see. We do a very right hemisphere exploration. The heart speaks like a dream analysis. But I don't do it when I'm doing the work. I'm taking notes and thinking of where it might go. Does that make sense?
Okay. So do you recommend then when we practice then with each other, we just practice one tool at a time instead of trying to, like in the beginning, we were asked to string a bunch of them together, right? And I guess that's maybe somewhere I thought we were supposed to keep doing that, you know, using sort of building
Cynthia, right? Yeah.
Jody.
No. Cynthia, oh, Jody. Okay. Yes, the beginning you had some of the thought-catching tools like Tell Me Where I'm Wrong and Say More and, you know, Wise. And that is to begin to find the thought. They're tools to use for thinking, for finding the thoughts, for thought-catching.
Right.
The queen of all of those tools is the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet once you can have the client learn how to use it or even have them dictate it, you know, on the phone. They're all thought-catching tools. So this one, the work, once you're in the work and you set it up, it has everything in it. It's self-contained.
Right.
So, but, you know, it might be that you would say, I wouldn't go with probably was why, but you might say more, you know,
mm-hmm.
if that feels right. When they're telling how they react, or I say anything else, which is really say more, you know, but it's not, you still have those tools behind you, but once you formally start the work, there's something Katie says all the time, and they say in the teaching, the work stops working when you stop answering the question. So let's just stay with these questions because they've been, you know, they've got a pretty good record. You know, it's a very, in my mind, it's a very elegant process. And they're there for a reason in the order that they are. Let's just suspend disbelief and ask the next question. And then the good news, Jody, is you don't have to work so hard as a coach. You've got those out in front of you. You don't even have to sound good. You just have to remember where you are on the list and remember to repeat the limiting belief, the one-liner. Repeat it a lot and then go back to the next question, repeat it. When you get to the turnaround, repeat those. But it really holds just about anything. And the remarkable thing is that you'll find that your clients go someplace that you knew nothing about, which was exactly where they needed to go. It's just stunning how it works, and it's not your business. Your business is to ask the questions. So it's a relief, actually. Does that make sense, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. I can tell you're doing your homework, or you wouldn't be asking these most fabulous, intelligent questions. So anything else? All right, let's practice. I guess there are a couple of updates that only you find, you will know. They are, a lot of people interested in the 9-day school, and they're really working hard to get a 9-day school that could be done not in location, like using online, you know, really sophisticated technology and maybe certified facilitators to bring groups together or anyway. So there may be a 9-day school may be possible within about a year. So I know a lot of people just can't get away and they're trying to figure out what to do about that. There's also a really good program if you live in Denver. It's really interesting where they're working with children. There's a good program on compulsion or compulsive eating. And lots of being done in business. It was impressive to see a wonderful one for cancer. So if anybody wants to know any of those, I can tell you more later. I promised you I would check in after the conference. Oopie doopie. Well, here's what I'm thinking. You've got the possibilities for turnarounds in front of you in your manual. And that's on page 2, I believe. Yeah. There's some points to remember. You stick to your client's language. Tells you where to look. Find genuine examples. Don't get in their work. You know, don't do your interpretation. But ask permission if you think of another turnaround, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Martha did that video that you may or may not have watched before she went to the school. So we just had the school of the work, and we just had an instructor's thing where she wanted to just do the work, and I was saying she's integrating it more, you know, and she wanted to make sure everybody knew that we need to do it, that there were some places that we weren't doing it according to how it's supposed to be done, but what she didn't realize is that we are. She's the last of the party. Not the very last, but anyway. It's kind of funny. And so those turnarounds, the video that she did is a little bit off, but it's fine. It's, you know. All right, so the kinds of turnarounds. Simone, are you on? Okay. Karen, give me a turnaround. Type of turnaround. Oh, I think she's here. All right. Somebody give me a turnaround.
I can give you a turnaround. This is Josie.
Yay.
Uh-huh. So I did the work yesterday on my first one, which is my daughter's not ready to adult. And the turnaround for me is I'm not ready for my daughter to adult.
So that's an example of turning it around to others. Does everybody understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That it's when you switch the subject and the object, the two parts of the sentence. That's not always possible. There's not always a turnaround to other, but that's turnaround to other. Thank you. That's the hardest for most people to grasp. So thank you. Okay, anybody else who has another type of turnaround, an example?
I have one.
Who's it?
Cindy.
Okay, yeah, there you are, Cindy.
Okay, the phrase was, I will never be who God wants me to be, and mine was, I will never not be who God wants me to be.
Oh, that's a beautiful one. Wow. Sounds like that landed for you.
It did.
So it's not possible. And then it would be really good for you to actually find your proof of that.
You mean to
and
be
I went, I was what when I read that I thought, God wants me to be something. Is that true?
Yeah.
But that's the implied belief that God has
right.
And it could be that you theologically believe that God has a plan for what the he wants you to be or she or whatever. But, you know, it's an interesting question nonetheless.
Ooh.
Good one. Okay, who else? Zamira?
Yeah. So, hi. So I kind of tightened the one that I had about my friends' questions being judgmental. So instead of my friends' questions are judgmental of me, I said I am judgmental of my friends' questions.
Hmm. And so did that seem as true or truer?
Yeah, there's an element there for sure. I can see how that would be equally true, if not truer.
Okay, and
I'm making assumptions based on what she's saying.
Right, right. And so one of the other Katie-isms is the mind requires proof. So if you take it into proof, like when remember when you do a judge your neighbor worksheet, you're doing it in a specific situation. So even with these turnarounds, this is a drill or a practice, but do you have a situation where you were believing that about your friend?
Yes. Yeah. I was at dinner on Saturday night, and I was discussing the person that I've been dating now for a couple months. And I mentioned a couple of things about him or things that he had said, and I just felt like she was asking questions, but she'd already kind of decided that there was something negative when she was asking the question. So do you want me to be specific? I mean, how specific should I be getting?
Well, what the turnaround was, she's not judgmental. Is that right?
No, the turnaround was that I'm judgmental of her questions.
Oh,
originally, I thought her questions
right.
were judgmental, and then I realized I think
right.
I'm judging her questions.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could notice that you're part in that, I'm hearing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. I saw them as loaded questions, even though I don't know them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
I'd made assumptions. Sorry.
Right. You know, one way is when you're working with turnarounds that can make it work is, you know, like she wasn't judgmental, or I wasn't judgmental of the turnaround was I was. Or I was judgmental of her. I was judgmental about the restaurant she chose. I was judgmental about her shoes, you know, or whatever. Sometimes we can catch ourselves or the client, you know, give them really kind of simple things. You know, we're looking for the big stuff that's going to move heaven and earth. Mm-hmm. But it just could be that she's not judgmental when she's asleep, that I can tell.
Right.
You know, if you can find some place that's fairly innocuous.
Where she's not judgmental or where I'm not judgmental, or both, basically.
Well, yeah, I turned it to she.
Both.
I just turned
to she.
It to
she. Okay.
It. But, yeah, mm-hmm. where you're not judgmental of her, if you can find a place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's another way to look at it. But it doesn't have to be a very big event or... I'm sorry. Find a time that you are judgmental of her if you're stuck just on one situation. Right?
I'm sorry. Say that again. Find a time that I'm judgmental of her.
Right. Because this is examples that are proof of your turnaround. Which
right.
Which is judgmental of her. But
right.
they don't have to be big ones.
Right.
It can be, I don't like her car. I think her boyfriend treats her badly. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it can, or but that's pretty big. It also could be, I think her taste sucks in shoes or restaurants.
Right.
You know, it's just to find that crankiness.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes
and
sense.
So it doesn't have to be the big ones. And so when you ask for three examples, they can be like that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Melissa. Do you have an example of a turnaround?
I do, actually. My broken arm is interrupting my life. My life is interrupting my broken arm.
Can you say that a little bit louder so I have the right words?
Sure. My broken arm is interrupting my life. My life
uh-huh.
is interrupting my broken arm.
Oh, did you find examples?
Yeah, definitely. It's just been a bit of an ordeal to deal with this thing, so I've been really frustrated around it. And this was through the help of my cadre, by the way. And I just, what it's really kind of allowed me to do is now sit back and look at my life instead of focusing on what I can't do because I have a broken arm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm still working. It's just on me instead of on doing things.
Mm-hmm. So that's my life is interrupting my broken arm. How's that proof of that?
I'm able to just move forward and live life without thinking of what's getting in my way by the
way. Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. And you might look for other examples. Like, are there times that you, I mean, I'm talking about my recovery period, and sometimes I bang it around because, by God, I want to have the life I had. Or, you know what I'm saying? Or I do something that's not so good because I still think I'm without a broken arm.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And there's a fear it's not healing right, too, because I'm having, like, tons of pain with it. But, definitely I try to do beyond. And so, actually, with this thought, I've been better about sitting back and not trying things that I probably should.
Great. Okay. And, by the way, somebody asked a question about chronic pain. For those of you who know about Tara Brock, or her husband, John House, Jonathan, J-O-N-A, F-O-U-S-T. They have some really, they're from a Buddhist perspective, but they have a particular mindfulness and have done it a long time. And they have some things on chronic pain that you might find helpful. Podcast. Okay, let's practice doing some more turnarounds. So I'm going to use the ones that you had. Okay. So we just did turn around to other several times. He's not. I think we had that one. So that's the opposite. Did we have that? So does somebody have an example of an opposite?
I do. This is Donna.
Oh, hi.
Hi. So my limiting belief was that my father is not dying gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
And So basically, the opposite was I'm not letting my father die gracefully. And what came out of that was all of my expectations of how he should act and behave. And so I came up with, you know, I'm expecting him to treat his children with gratitude for all the things we're doing. I'm expecting him to process his death by getting all the way through the grief process to the acceptance stage. I've been expecting him to be this sort of elder leading me, showing me how to die gracefully. And what I came up with was I'm not dying gracefully to my expectations. And my expectations need to just die. They just need to die. Mm-hmm. So that I can have grace for who he is and where he is and just be kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
beautiful,
really
Donna.
Been amazing. It's really helped me.
What a journey.
Serve him because he's just struggling with that process. And I've been judgmental of his struggle and frustrated and thinking, you're just not doing it right. You should do this better, as if I have any right to, you know, to judge him that way. So I can just tell there's a shift between us since I've just dropped my expectations.
Beautiful. Yeah, isn't that amazing? This is radical work. Technically, if I were going to give you feedback, my father's not dying gracefully. It was the actual turnaround, and we try to stay really close in the wording, it would be, I'm not dying gracefully. And then you got at that toward the end. You said, I'm not
right.
You put a word in there. And it sounds like a tricky, but it does. It could make a difference, you know.
Right.
And would actually be, I'm not dying gracefully. And then you did say how that was true to my expectations. You might want to look at those expectations and turn them around to yourself, the things that you thought were his job, and see if that they might be your job and your challenge.
Oh, that's good.
Turnarounds can be very useful that way. Beautiful. So what would the opposite be in this case, Donna? He's not dying gracefully. What's the opposite?
Possibly graceful is not dying.
Well, that's something tricky I might do at the end, perhaps. But how about he is dying gracefully? Really straightforward, and that's an opposite.
That is true. That is very straightforward. That does not resonate.
Well, you know, I would suggest that you sit with it. You know, it might be,
okay.
I don't know, but it might be graceful for him, or it might be, if you look at grace as the concept it is spiritually, that he's being held by grace in his process. Or, you know, I wouldn't just dismiss it. Because that's your mind that's still, you know, sure of itself.
So you said he is dying gracefully.
That would be the turnaround.
That would be a turnaround. That would be a good turnaround for me to sit with. Yeah.
That would be a good one, and it's good to sit with him, too. He's not dying gracefully. He is dying gracefully. I'm not dying gracefully. So that's other. Is there another turnaround? See, to me, this is where you got into the strange one that could be kind of like other. I'm not, but because we don't have an object, those are the two. Now, something that I love, and it's not in your book, so it's just a hot tip, is the extreme turnaround. And I don't usually use that till the end because people aren't ready for it. So what was the thought originally?
My father is not dying gracefully.
Right. So
what's the opposite of, you could go either way, what's the opposite of graceful?
Awkward.
Yeah, so it would just be change the word out. Well, he's not dying awkwardly. And it may not be real for you, but sometimes that's a huge one, just as an example. Also, the other opposite would be my father's, you would change dying to living.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not about the dying, it's the living. And then you can see where that's coming in, wherever it goes. Okay, I'm just doing the technicals here, and it's yours to continue to be with. And thank you for sharing.
Thank
that.
You. Thank you so much.
Great opportunity. You're welcome.
I have a question. It's Jody. Would you mind, could you just say a little bit more about the extreme turnaround, how that's different?
Yeah, it's like, and you see Katie use it all the time, but we don't have it in the materials, and I'm finding that it's helpful to people. So it's just... let me look at your thoughts. I have to flip my screens here. Well, somebody give me a thought. Okay.
My in-laws should have been nicer.
My in-laws should have been nicer. So you've got... They shouldn't have been nicer.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, I should have been nicer to them. That's other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't mention the third turnaround, and people are doing it, I think. I should be nicer to me. That's the turnaround itself when it concerns my in-laws in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the extreme opposite would be my in-laws should be meaner.
Okay, got it.
And it's just, again, it's just to open the mind. How could that
right.
be, is what I would ask. You know, and it may or may not have, and sometimes those people just go, oh, my God. So those are the four. I mean, we list three, but those are the four that I think are the most useful. You'll also hear my thinking attached to my thinking, and Martha uses this one a lot. That has been, for a long time, there's kind of been the request that that's not overused, and it's used mostly when you're talking about objects or your body. So the turnaround with my body's flabby, it's not flabby, it might be my thinking is flabby about my body. But people tend to overuse it and miss some of the ones that actually have more of an impact, so we didn't list it, but it's something you can work with. Or the bankers are all, banks are unfair. That's my thinking is unfair about money or about banks or whatever. And then you'd see what's true for you. Okay. Who hasn't had a chance to practice? I'm guessing Simone's not on the call. And Karen, I don't think Karen's on the call. And I think Silke isn't on the call.
I'm actually here.
Oh, yay!
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just a quiet one.
Oh, I love that. They're my favorite. I want you to do some turnarounds to practice. And you didn't send any in, right? I don't see any here. So here's the thought. I have no idea why, but the leadership at my workplace is inept. Turn it around. Are you there?
Are you addressing me specifically?
Yes. I was going to ask you to turn that around.
I see. Yes. So, Susan, you said the leadership at my workplace is what?
Inept.
Inept. Inept. Yes. Okay. The leadership at my workplace is NF. Okay, so turn it around to self would be, I am at my workplace inept.
Mm-hmm.
Or another turnaround to self would be, I am in my workplace professional or enough.
Yeah, let's start with just the opposite. Let's just say the leadership is, we'll just say, incapable. And we'll just
okay, that would be the opposite.
Make it simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes,
so the leadership of my workplace is incapable. What's the opposite?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for changing the word to incapable. Thank you.
Yes, it'll be much easier.
Yes. The leadership at my workplace is capable.
Right. That would be the opposite.
That would be the opposite. The other would be, I am at my workplace incapable.
In some way, you could just look at where am I incapable at my workplace.
Mm-hmm. And I, because right now then it would confuse me with turning it around to self or other. But, I mean, recapping to the fact that you just gave us the extreme turnaround.
Well, here's what I did, that, Donna, that might be confusing. You actually used this extreme turnaround in this one. So the leadership is incapable is actually the extreme, it's the opposite of capable, right? Oh, you're
it's
right.
True. Yeah.
It's capable. You already did it. So here's, you could say not incapable. Would be the first opposite.
Not incapable. That could.
Yeah, they're not completely. They're not completely inept. They're not completely incapable. And have some examples. And then, if you want to go to the extreme, it would be, oh well, maybe they're capable.
No, it's a question of degree, I guess. When it's not incapable becomes capable. I don't know.
Ooh, right. It's turtle steps.
I don't find these turnarounds natural. I'm sorry. I'm really like, oh my god, that's why.
Well, you will. It's practice.
Yeah.
So why don't you help ask for the turnarounds with somebody else? So here's the thought.
Okay.
It's for Julia, and the thought is, my sister-in-law is very demanding, and. You coach her through the turnaround.
That was Karen, though, who had the demanding sister-in-law, Rebecca. Do you remember that? Sorry.
Not right? You under the sun, right?
No.
You have the same chicken religion.
the chicken with sour cream.
That's right. She did. I liked her story a lot, actually.
Yeah. Okay, Julia. Thank you for letting me practice.
Sure.
So, Julia, your thought is my sister-in-law is very demanding.
Yes.
So if you turn this around, is it actually true for you, Julia, or is it just a make-believe? We're just playing right now. Or is it actually
true? Well, no, I can talk myself out of it, but yes, it's true.
Okay, good. Well, exploration, whatever will show up, right? There's no right.
And I'm right here, Silka, so just,
wait.
Just set her up and lead her through three.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Julia, if you turn it around, turning it around to self, what would that be? My sister-in-law is very demanding.
Then I am very demanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be to self.
Yeah. And do you have an example for that?
Sure. I'm being demanding about how she's behaving. I mean, I'm really
hanging a lot on how she's acting. So there's some standard there that I'm asking her to meet.
Yeah.
I'm demanding that she meet it to not be annoyed with her.
And you don't need to do the three examples. That'll be good.
Okay, great.
That's pretty good, right?
Do you have another example for turning it around to sell?
No,
wait a minute.
Standing. Nope.
Other? What you're saying is now turn it around to yourself.
Right. I thought she just did that actually when she did.
Yeah, I did.
So then you have to do different turnarounds.
Okay, good. So, Julia, could you please turn the thought, my sister is very demanding, turn it around to other?
I don't really know how to do that. I struggle with the other with some of these. I don't even know how to phrase that because there's no object.
Mm-hmm. Can I talk for Sophia? It would be, you know, like she's very demanding of me in this situation or of him in this situation. If you have a situation where you thought she was demanding.
Right.
And then it would be, do you have one?
May I offer something? Maybe it's a question,
uh-huh.
maybe it's
yes,
a sentence.
Absolutely.
So would it be okay to turn it around to something like the world is very demanding?
No.
No, okay. Why not?
No. Well, you're going to stay because this particular tool is
mm-hmm.
completely focused on a moment, meditating on a moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get too abstract,
gotcha.
It could be later on in coaching, you might say, hey, I had the thought. You know, what's the, you know,
mm-hmm.
if, once you're done with the work, if you feel like that wasn't an inspiration that may be supportive, I would do it later.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it's like how I understand it is we want to take the flashlight and narrow the flashlight in rather than diffusing the light out and using the world.
Beautiful.
Would be more like diffusing the light out.
Exactly. That's a really good analogy. You're going to do great with
okay.
the metaphor work.
Okay. Thank you.
So
mm-hmm.
She's very demanding. That might not have been the best example, but let's just play with it. So she turned it around to herself. I usually, true confession, I really don't start with self first. And I've heard other people say that it doesn't work for them either.
Mm-hmm.
It is the way it's in all the materials, but I start with opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the extreme opposite, just the opposite. Because that's wiggling the tooth to me.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are so, they're in self-help programs because they want to judge, they believe that they're a problem. And
mm-hmm.
so to turn it around to self just perpetuates that.
Yeah.
Unless you've gone far enough in the inquiry. So that's my Tao thing. I don't like it. Want to start with that. I like to start with opposite. If there's an other, fine. And then maybe turn around to self because you've opened it up a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just writing this down. That's so great. We often believe that we're a problem, that we are broken. So the self just perpetuates this. That is so
exactly.
amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah, we forget that. Mm-hmm.
And it's totally true with our clients, too. They're
yeah,
going to come
yeah.
to you with the idea,
mm-hmm.
then they come to me anyway, that they're broken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why they're paying you the big bucks, right? You're going to fix them. And so if you can start from a different place than that, and so I don't do the turnaround to other unless it's really gentle and it's just a, you know, so how could in this situation, how am I, just look at how that could be true. So it doesn't
mm-hmm.
come out of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an opening of the mind. It's, I think doing others is tricky and you need to set the stage. I mean,
self. Yeah.
Yeah.
Set the stage. Okay. Well, who else would like to practice before I screw everybody up?
We are broken already. Don't you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
I put myself on mute now.
That was very clever. Well, actually,
this is Jennifer. I can
share. Oh, Jennifer. Okay, go for it. So,
my limiting belief is silence is not an empathetic response. So this is just basically when I'm coaching people. Sometimes when I feel like
I want to help them, and sometimes I feel like silence is not an empathetic response. And so
well,
I turn that around to my...
Okay, you want to go ahead. Yeah, go on.
I turn that around to my thoughts are not an empathetic response. And that silence...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an empathetic response is silence because it is holding the space for the client.
Mm-hmm. That would be kind of switching it. The subject and the object.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if I were looking at that, I might go to, if you're turning it around to yourself, it's like, when is silence not an empathetic response to you? Which is understood in that sentence. So you understood. I'm just a word person. I'm a poet. I taught English. I can't help myself. So silence is not an empathetic response.
To me, yeah.
Now,
I would
is
say that.
For me. Can you find an example?
Yeah, if I was pouring my heart out to someone, I'd want them to say something.
For instance.
Make me feel better.
Yeah, could be. Or when I'm silent, you know, I love silence and it seems kind, but sometimes it's not very, I go silent, when I'm silent, I'm harsh on me. I'm not really empathetic with me. I mean, that's when you can kind of, break out from it. Be like, well, how is that? That could be. Silence isn't empathetic. Okay. Who hasn't had a chance to practice or ask a question yet? I don't know if, is it Lisa? Are you on? Okay. Who would like to practice some more? Just specifically with turnarounds. I feel like there's a lot we could do.
This is Melissa, and I have a question, actually.
Okay.
Is it, in doing the turnaround, is it really important to use the same wording, or can you actually use an anonym in the turnaround?
Use the same wording unless you're using the extreme turnaround. Now, the reason for this that I've come to understand, and I think I probably told you the first time I saw Byron Katie, I thought, got it. You know, I get it. I had all the little questions, and I was ready, good to go, you know, because I've been to so many workshops. I like to be creative. I was taught and led a lot of stuff. But what I discovered is that if you stay close in, this is a very different work. And if you stay close in, the mind can be more unprotected. And you as a coach are like you're holding the rope for this person to examine their own mind. And if you put in another word, it could throw off the whole thing for them. You know, it's their words. So you're holding it and you're not throwing in anything new so that they can – I'm not a rock climber, but I think you're the belayer maybe anyway, so that they can keep their foothold and be held strong in it.
That makes sense.
Another word comes up to you and you want to talk about it later, that's fine. But when they're in inquiry, the mind, the ego, this is about the ego, and the ego won't open up if it thinks that it's going to get manipulated or jumped on or what, it just hides. So we're trying to feel safe enough that that part will come out and show itself that we don't often look at. And even changing a word might feel to somebody like they're disrespecting their belief, whatever they said. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. What if they would change the word? Should you encourage them to stick with the original?
Yep. So we're done. I mean, you know, it's not a hard and fast rule. There are times that I get into question three and I realize they say something else and I take it and I think, oh, we're down. This is maybe a thought that would be juicier, but I don't let them choose. You want this thought or this thought. That's something people often do, no, because you're the leader. But I might say, you know, I'd like to look at that one. We can come back to this one, you know, later, but not if I'm all the way in. No, I just heard you say this. Does that sound like it, you know, that's a good one to look at or something? But I wouldn't have them decide, do I do this one or this one? Think about it. It's just grab and go.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Susan, this is Donna.
Hi.
Hi. I wasn't sure I unmuted. So one of my limiting beliefs I didn't tackle because it seemed too overwhelming to me and too broad. And I think I wrote it down. The limiting belief is something like my health is a revolving door of issues.
That's it.
And I don't know if that's too broad to work with.
Well, I don't know. I think if that's your thought, and that's, by the way, another thing that I sometimes say to clients, and I've heard Katie say a lot, it's like, I didn't make this up. This was your thought.
That's
really nice.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Well,
I keep imagining this, like, circular door, you know, that you walk through,
uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, I got that surgery done, so now I'm on to the next surgery, so now I'm in a car accident. So now I have this disease, and so it feels really true that I just have a revolving door of, all right, what's next that I have to, you know, deal with, and I never really get to, you know, be healthy for more than a couple months at a time.
Well, I've had that one. That would be good to do the work on. Would you be the client?
I would love some help with this.
Now, who am I talking to? Donna?
This is Donna.
Yeah. All right. Who wants to coach Donna using the with this thought and just see where it goes? It's a meditation. I see that most of you have coached before, and so I would just invite you to step up.
I can do it, Jody.
Okay, Jody, you got it. Now, everybody else, this is really going to be interesting, I think. So write down the thought.
No pressure, though, Jody.
Expect to be entertained. Get some popcorn.
Okay,
I'm take notice of every twist and turn because we'll be talking about this. And I have no idea where it'll go, but I think it'll be a challenging one, and I think you're up to it. So go, Jody.
Okay, so I'm talking to Donna. Is that right?
You're talking to Donna. Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Yes, Jody.
Hi, Donna.
Thank you for your courage.
Oh, thank you for your courage. Okay, so Donna, can you just tell me again what this thought that's troubling you is? Share it with me.
The thought is, my health is a revolving door of issues.
Okay. My health is a revolving door of issues. Okay. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. And you know that 100% for sure.
It feels so like there's no room to wiggle in that one, yeah. I would say yes to both questions, that it's absolutely true.
Okay. All right. So what happens when you believe that thought? My health is a revolving door of issues.
Good. Repeat it. Good.
Mm-hmm. I think what happens is I choose not to eat healthy. I basically lay down and give up. I choose not to exercise. I would say basically I feel the thought is, what's the use? Why try?
Right. Okay. But okay. It feels like giving up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, that's how you treat yourself. How do you treat others when you believe the thought, my health is a revolving door of issues?
How do I treat others? I feel jealous.
Okay, feel jealous. And then how do you treat others when you're feeling jealous?
I believe that they don't have compassion.
Okay, so you feel, you believe they don't have compassion, you feel jealous, and then how do you behave towards them? How do you treat others?
I would say I just pull back from intimacy.
Okay. 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 All right. So, Donna, who would you be without the thought, my health is a revolving door of issues? Who would you be without that thought?
I would be encouraged and motivated.
Okay, and how would you treat yourself without that thought?
Probably my dog would benefit the most. I would walk him a lot more. I would walk my dog.
Okay.
I would
He'd
go
be
to
more
the
active.
Gym. I would be more active, yeah.
Okay.
Simply
good.
Put.
Okay. Good. And how would you treat others if you didn't have the thought, my health is a revolving door of issues?
I guess I would just join in. I would just join into more conversations. I might join into more activities that were physical. I would just join in.
Yeah, you join in. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to turn the thought around, okay? So how could you turn that around to its opposite?
My health is a revolving door of opportunity.
Okay, I see where you're going with that. I wonder if just the if you could just make it the exact opposite. So if the thought is my health is a revolving door of issues, what would the exact opposite of that be?
My health is not
a
revolving door of issues.
Okay, good. Okay, and I want you just to feel, as we say them, I want you to see if you can feel them in your body. So feel that thought in your body, my health is not a revolving door of issues. Okay, and if it's okay to move on, now can you turn the thought around? Let's see. How would the thought sound or feel if you turned it around?
Okay, Jody. Jody.
Yeah.
Jody.
Thank you.
you've been doing fine. I think this is a place where it's, I love that you took her back to it's not a revolving door of issues.
Okay.
But for that to have any power, she's going to have at least three examples of how it's not.
Okay. Yes. So then
that'll help her land.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So support her in finding those.
Right. Okay. So, Donna, I'm wondering if you can give me some examples of that of my health is not a revolving door of issues.
Okay, this is where I'm struggling. just quick background. So I got in a car accident, been in physical therapy, had to stop physical therapy because I was in the ER for heart stuff, ended up having sleep apnea, finally started walking again, and I probably need an MRI because I probably need surgery for my knee or my ankle from the previous accident. It's been ignored while I'm dealing with all these other things. So I'm looking at, okay, I've got to go see the sleep apnea doctor this week. Now I need to go schedule an MRI. And so that's where it feels so not true. In my daily life, you know, it feels like, you know, all I do is spend my money and my time at the doctor's when I want to be skiing with my husband, going to the gym with my husband, and I can't.
Okay, so Jody,
yes.
To pause.
Yeah.
She's definitely wedded to this one, and I get why, because yeah. My recent history is almost exactly the same, so it was like eerie, so I really get it.
Right. Yeah,
but what we want to do is just like a little wiggling of the tooth. Like every your life is a revolving door of issues. Is that true every day? You know, really, like, you know, because she's the story is very much with her than before. So.
Right. Right. Okay, a question.
So just
this is just
think where that could be true, that it's not. Like,
okay.
See what she comes
to have up. A question.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And I'm happy to do that. Sorry, Donna, we just still have a little more coffee talk here to do. I'm happy to do that. But now I feel a little bit unsure because the way I thought I understood the work is that if this one isn't feeling true for her, then we need to move on to the next turn.
Yes,
like, then
that's correct.
Not
you will,
the right
move, you will move on. You will move on, but I think that I would still hold her in this one. Like, can you think of any examples?
Okay,
and
so you're
don't
using
push
your intuition.
It. I mean, I'm one to say keep your hands off all the time, but don't push it, but just say, you know, let's look. The mind requires proof. Is there any time that, you know, you're in your life that it doesn't, you aren't dealing with this revolving door of issues, you know? It's just looking at the other side. It's not to talk her out of it.
Right. It's just a gentle pressure. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Donna, thank you for sharing that background with me, and I can hear that you've had, you know, that's not been easy for you. But I'm going to ask you if it's true that every day your life is a revolving door of health issues. Is that true, 100%?
No, it is not true every day.
Okay. So can you give me an example, you know, of a day when it wasn't, when your health wasn't a revolving door of issues? Can you give me an example?
When recently I was able to walk in the mountains 2 miles with my friends up a mountain, and that was exciting to me and rare and very, very wonderful.
Good. Can you give me another example?
When I had the health to take care of my daughter for a month.
Wow. Okay, how about one more?
That I can walk my dog, just not quite as far as I'd like, but I can I can walk my dog.
Right, nice. Okay. Can walk my dog. Okay. So there's a turnaround for you. My health is not always a revolving door of issues. I inserted always. Is it okay if can we just move on and see if we can turn this thought around to yourself? Okay, so how could we turn that around? How can you turn that around? My health is a revolving door of issues on yourself.
See, I'm not very good at these turnarounds, taking them or giving them.
I wonder, and so then you can jump in. If this would be a good
talk for both of us.
Okay. would this be a good place if she can't? Because I can see this is a hard one. Would this be a good place to insert my thinking? My thinking is a revolving door of issues.
Right. That would be a different one, though. Let's just see, since you started with that, turning it around to self, I think that's a hard one, too. I might not have turned it around to self, but,
okay.
I can see that it would be thinking, but I'm a revolving door of issues in myself.
So say that
in relation to my thinking. Yeah. So see if she finds anything that way.
So I wrote, my thinking about my health is a revolving door of issues.
So now let's grab it.
Okay, that's a good one, Donna. Can you give me an example? Can you give me an example of how you're thinking about yourself?
Yes. So some days I try really hard to eat healthy and actually enjoy it. So some days I try and I actually enjoy it. Some days I truly have hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so some days I try, some days I have hope. And I'm learning to be kind when I fail when I eat junk food or drink a Diet Coke. I'm learning to be kinder in my judgment about the way I treat my body.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so can you give me an example of when your thinking is the revolving door of issues? So that's an example of when you're thinking positively. Do you have an example of when it's your thinking that's the issue?
Since I've been trying to work on this a little bit, what I did was I wrote my body a letter of apology. Trying to see what it does give me, the fact that I, can see, the fact that I can hear, the fact that I have the mental capacities to drive. So I apologize to my body in this letter, and then I felt like my body said, hey, your ankle may need to have surgery, but look. You can see and you can hear and you can taste and you have the mental faculties to drive and blah, 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 blah. So it's been a revolving door of thoughts and emotions and hope and leading to some different actions.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to call time here. And if Donna, did you want to respond to that? And then we'll... debrief. Nice job.
Donna
yes,
or Jody?
Jody.
Okay. Well, I would like to ask a question here, if that's okay, before we close. Is that all right, Susan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I asked Donna that question, and that's really beautiful. She's obviously been working on this already. But I felt like my agenda was that I wanted her to see how that when she thinks negatively, right, when she thinks, oh, my body is falling apart or whatever, that's the revolving door of issues, but that's not where she was going. And so, which is okay.
Is it true that's not where she was going? I thought that's where she was going. Donna?
Well, she kept giving positive examples.
Oh,
which is great.
Okay.
Like, that's lovely. Right. But then I was just thinking, huh, okay, if we were to keep going, would I just move, like, okay, so she's giving me positive examples, beautiful. Would we just move to the next turnaround, which would be the other? Or I just wasn't sure how I would have proceeded or maybe.
Right. Well, I don't know. I'll just speak for me. I thought you really hit pay dirt in there. And I don't always go for all of them. And the key there would be in, to me, would be in the, quote, homework.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because you can give awareness homework, right? So, you know, I'd like you to notice and make a list of when you're thinking is a revolving door of issues around your health. It's thinking about your health.
Right.
And
good. I like that.
And so what is, you know, what was the circumstance? What was the thought? And then you can do the work with it.
Right.
But a lot of this we'll be able to tie in with ACT next week, too, because it's another way to approach this. Mm. But I often have people keep thought journals, thought catchers. So, you know, just write it down when you're noticing that you're thinking about your health is a revolving door.
Right. Okay, that's good.
The other turnaround, Donna, and Joey, why don't you ask her what's the opposite of revolving and see what comes up?
Okay, so Donna, what's the opposite in your mind of revolving?
An open passage.
Okay, so what happens when you insert the opposite of revolving?
Instead of the happens, we don't want to do that so much because we're not looking for a better feeling thought. It's just, is there a way that could be as true or truer? That's an open passage. See what you find, you know. So, see what you find.
Well, I just have to thank you guys because I felt some big wiggles, you know, not landing, but some big wiggles with just the word opportunity. Rather than the word issue. It's like I am still alive. I'm still kicking. I have so many opportunities, and I'm grateful for like a gazillion surgeries that fix things. It's like I literally would have been dead 3 times if I had not had a surgeon fix me. And so I'm grateful.
Wow.
But I just I love the word open passage, and I love the idea of thought catchers because maybe that's what I need to really get landed and not feel like some days I'm like, rah-rah, I'm going to, you know, work on my body and treat it well, and then other days I'm like, where are the cookies? And I feel like I flip-flop really between this world of believing one thing, and I don't want to flip-flop anymore. I want to settle into the deep belief that my body is good to me so that I can be good to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that combination of open door and opportunity, open passageway and opportunity.
Yeah.
together. It seems like that was that's a huge shift. So then the question, the homework would be, so what will you do this week to explore that opportunity, that passageway? How would your week look different between now and the time we talk next?
Good one. Good one.
You all, this is really this is the billion-dollar trick. She's given herself homework. And then you just hold the support for her, the witnessing, or she'll check back with you. But it's her and her. That's why I love the work. So you want to continue? Because you guys, you're really in some good work here. Would you like call each other another time and you could do that? That's called living the turnaround. And maybe you could tease that out a little bit. It would be a short call, I'm guessing.
Sure. I'd be happy to follow up.
Yeah.
I'd be happy, Donna, to follow up with you.
Okay. I'm just not very good at getting the phone number from the website.
I'll just do it right now.
Okay. So, Jody, what's your phone number?
250-307-6465.
Okay.
And what's yours?
Well, she can call you, and then why don't you just, you can.
Okay.
Just text
her. Call you
text me. Donna,
I'm
text
dyslexic.
Me your number. Yeah.
I will.
Just text
I'm dyslexic.
Me. Text me yours.
Let me just say 250-307-6465.
Yes. And please text me yours, and then we can exchange emails, too.
Okay. I will text.
Okay.
Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. I want to call the whole class in. I want to make sure we have time for that. I really like that you're doing that, and will you please check back with us? It's just another week. So you can fit that in, and maybe you can even do a follow-up to see how it went for her and do more work with her in that time, because this is a really awesome time, moment to work, okay? And then you'll check back in with us next week, okay?
Sounds great.
So what by the way, that was so, I don't know, authentic. I have an awe word. I was going to say awesome, but it was very authentic. And so I'd like to hear, and you did, you followed the format really well. You were so careful to not put words in her mouth. I want you to know that I noticed that, Jody.
Thank you.
I want to hear if the class had questions or if you had any questions about the facilitation. And then we'll hear from I think it's going to be important to hear from Donna. So,
I have a question. This is Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff that was coming up, especially during the four questions, felt to me like it was all head stuff as opposed to body
mm-hmm.
stuff. Is that okay to work with just that and just let the other stuff go?
Well, the tricky part, it doesn't matter. I hear that Martha said she uses her body all the time. And I don't know, she's just integrating this right now, really. I mean, she's been doing it, but this is an integration time. I think if you do too much body stuff, then you're not really you're getting into, well, this feels better or this feels worse or this resonates
right.
or it doesn't, And we're trying to get away from too much of that because it's not really we're going for truth here and freedom. And sometimes
right.
the freedom
right.
doesn't feel good in your body.
Okay.
At first. I mean, this is called the work because it's work. And so it isn't always feeling good. Now, where I ask the body questions is in question 3, and then
right.
sometimes I'll make a slight comment about, oh, that sounds like that's kind of heavy or shackled off, or whatever, like I'm 3, I'm 4. But I do almost always ask the body question when we're in the moment of meditation on the situation. I ask them to describe where they are in their body, the feeling, this huge feeling list that you can use on thework.com. And then we talk about where that feeling is in their body. And it's a really good way to help them climb back into their bodies then, to have a vocabulary for the feeling, or notice that a feeling is really just energy in the body. We call just the bad.
But it isn't necessary to do that. You don't have to do that.
No, I just look for opportunities to check in with their body when I'm doing it. But okay. I would know. All the other questions are so good, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't just go.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jennifer.
Uh-huh.
I've been hearing a lot that if the work is a meditation. So if the work is a meditation, should we be doing some sort of grounding exercises at some point during this process?
You know, that's a really good question. I think I would say yes. I usually do grounding or short meditation before I even pick up the phone to call someone, because I feel that's my commitment.
I meant with the client. I know we should do it to make sure we're clean, but
with the client, no. Not so much, you know, because we're trying to see how they suffer. And the work itself is a meditation. You don't have to, you can just say, check in with yourself, you know, close your eyes, get very still. If you find, you know, listen to your wisdom, see if you find a yes or no. That's how I would do it.
Thank you.
And I really try to stay close to the work. So that's how I've seen, you know, people in the work do it a lot. I think the thing about the grounding is that it could be fine, but it can get a little teachy, and the questions themselves actually ask you to ground yourself if you slow down number one and number two.
Right.
Actually, there's no right answer. It comes from silence. Pardon me?
I'm sorry. This is Cindy again. I was on the quarterly call with Martha, and she made the statement that she waits until the person comes to the no on the second question.
That is Martha. Let me just tell you, I know that that's what she's doing. That is not the way the work is usually taught. So you can do whatever you want. I mean, I just went down there. Katie, you know, was there. She never says wait to come to a no.
Okay.
It's a yes is equally adequate, but don't tell Martha, I said that, and Martha, after listening to the tape, so I think I'm safe. No, I think that's not my understanding, and I mean, I don't want to put myself up as a big expert, but, you know, this takes a while, it's subtle work, and I would just suggest a yes is great. For me, I've heard Katie use yes for the number two. She doesn't push it.
Because on the Terry DeMayo audio, she said that she always used to say the first question was yes whenever it was being done to her. She was doing the work. And the second question was a no, and now she realizes that it's not important or it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Or the second question doesn't have to be a no. It can be a yes, and that's fine.
That's correct. That was something that we did together. And that it can be a
okay.
And so I take the yes as, Dad, you know, you better believe it, Dad, gummit. Yeah, I really believe this. And it's just, to me, it's just an indication of how committed they are to their yes. And it's perfectly fine.
Okay, good. Thank you.
It's like the no would just be getting spiritual before you've actually had the opportunity to really walk it through and find something that's deeper that might make you answer no. But that it's like a premature spiritual
right.
elevation.
Right. An early awakening.
I got a sexual thing there.
Okay. So are we asking the second question to get them to start the wiggling from the belief?
Not necessarily. It's just checking in and allowing them to go deeper in their own body, their experience. So it's, can you absolutely know? And you kind of see whether there's a reasonable doubt. You know, and then you move on to how do you react. It's to me, it's bringing them into a meditative state.
Okay.
But it's not a debate or a pushing at all on number two because we're not pushing.
Right.
And I'll take Martha on it, but, you know, it's fine. You know, she's just a darling, and that's what she does. Oh, there goes my job security. Whatever that was. OK. Okay. Well, and I didn't. I listened to an instructor call that she did, and there were some ways that was a little, you know, she's great, and she loves the work, and it's all out of the best heart possible. So, and there are some ways that I think it could, we still could be confusing people, but it's way better than it was. So we're good. I mean, it used to be after number two, you were supposed to say, give me three reasons it might not be true, which completely goes into the mental.
Right.
So we don't do that anymore.
Okay. This is Donna. Just my experience in doing this, I felt very connected to my body when Jody got me down to the everyday. Is that true every day?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then she gave me evidences for where it was, you know, that my body wasn't a revolving door of issues every day because, the body memory of walking up the mountain and taking care of my daughter and her family, I felt them in my body, not just, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, I did that. And so I think that the places of evidence can be really powerful body-wise.
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely. That's why bringing it into the present moment is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
cool.
Thank you for that feedback. That's great. Oh, there's one other point that is kind of a really good trick that I wanted to mention. I wanted to mention it just then in the facilitation. You can say, my body isn't a revolving door. If they're stuck, you can say, can I offer suggestions? And add the word if or when. So it isn't a revolving door, which is related to your everyday thing.
Right.
A revolving door when, and just see what they come up with. And that helps if it's a big concept like that. It kind of gets the momentum, kind of gets it moving. That's one of my little cheap tricks. Okay. So, wow, we're over. Are there any other questions? I get to talk to you next week. In the meantime, if you can, go to Inquiry Power Hour. Continue to do this work. You can look at your homework. We'll be doing checking back in the work, getting more questions answered, and so practice that this week with some of the tools that I shared with you. And then we'll be doing acceptance and commitment theory, which is another mindfulness-based practice of looking at thoughts. Okay?
Great.
All right. Oh, and ask any questions at all. I'll post something on the forum. I'll post a strand, but that's a good place to reach me.
Great.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not.